Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Game Talk Radio. And yes, there's nothing wrong with your podcasting app. It is not replaying an old episode. This is in fact a new episode that's only a week or a few days after the last one. I know what you're thinking. Maybe you're dreaming. Maybe it's the best dream of your life. You're going to wake up. No, if you remember, if you listened to the last episode, I was originally going to talk about two things, and I only talked about one, and I wanted to talk about the second, and I wanted to do that podcast as well. So this one might be a little bit shorter. The other one went long with my first topic, but this topic was never the main one of that week. So I still wanted to get it out, though, and I still wanted to chat with you all about it and kind of run it down. So what we're going to be talking about today is the official lawsuit that's been filed by Nintendo to the creators of the Yuzu emulator, which is a Switch emulator, which has been readily available for quite some time. And so this, a few podcasts ago, I did one on, is emulation a dirty word? And I did one on emulation versus preservation versus piracy. And I've talked about this topic many times. So you can go back and listen to those episodes if you haven't heard those. I recommend listening to those first so you can kind of get an idea of where I stand on the whole thing. I'll give kind of a recap. But ultimately, I think, without rehashing too much of it, I think my ultimate point is that if you're going to pirate and you want to play things and you want to have access to every game, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with piracy at all. Even though my whole livelihood is based off of people buying and paying for nostalgic memories, I'm okay with it. If you don't have the money to spend $800 on Kuon for PS2, then don't do it. Emulate it, and hopefully the game's fun, and I hope you enjoy it. So long. It doesn't bother me at all. I'm more than happy to talk about the benefits of emulation, and I quite enjoy it. In fact, how I play most of my retro games nowadays is emulated. Obviously, I am a collector, and I have a huge collection of video games, and I have almost everything I would play, but I also emulate and play a bunch of things that I don't have. I'm especially into playing fan translations of games that never came out here, so a lot of PlayStation 1 RPGs, old Super Nintendo RPGs, etc. So my stance on emulation right out the gate is good for you. Go ahead, do it. But I'm going to call you out if you emulate everything just to do it, right? I think there comes a point where emulating certain things that have gotten priced out of the market, or emulating certain things that, you know, are old and they're not, you know, really, there's not really anything lost if you don't buy a copy of it. You know, I think an argument can be made there. But there's this sort of weird, I don't want to say social justice, white knighting is probably the right term for it, where people are almost like, piracy is the right thing to do. And that's why I pirate. No, you don't pirate. You pirate it because you don't want to pay for it, but you still want to have the experience of that game. And I'm okay with that. But be honest about it. You know, don't hide behind the guise of preservation. Don't hide behind the guise of you're doing the right thing or sticking it to a corporation that's evil. Like, just admit it. Like, you're pirating a game because you don't want to pay for it, but you still want to play it. And so that's where I think a lot of people think I'm anti-emulation, which I'm not at all. But I'm very much on personal accountability. And if you're going to do it, then own it. Own it and say you're freaking pirate. It's fine. I mean, it's not, who cares, you know? But that brings us to a really interesting story, because this just happened, I think, yesterday. Well, whenever you listen to this, I might not put this up for a couple of days, so, you know, whatever. So it happened prior to this podcast. And there's a really good Ars Technica article about it, and I'm going to be quoting a lot of that article and kind of reading through and talking about the points as I go through. So this is, like I said last week, if you listened, this is a very old school kind of Game Talk Radio. This is Greg's got websites up and Twitter pages up and game sales data pages up. Like, we're not playing around today. So I'm going to start with the Ars Technica. The headline, this is by Kyle Orland. This was put up on February 27th. How strong is Nintendo's legal case against Switch emulator Yuzu? The article goes on to say, Nintendo has filed a lawsuit against Tropic Haze LLC, the makers of the popular Yuzu emulator that the Switch maker says is, quote, facilitating piracy at a colossal scale, end quote. So right away, Tropic Haze LLC, okay, whatever. I'll admit, I've never used yuzu. I know a lot of people do. I know a lot of people were turning their Steam Decks into mini Switches and such. And but I'm not familiar with it. So any ignorance on my part is because I've never used the software. I'll be talking in very general terms about emulation and emulators versus actual pirated copies of the games and such. But carrying on. The federal lawsuit filed Monday in the District Court of Rhode Island is the company's most expansive and significant argument yet against emulation technology that it alleges, quote, turns general computing devices into tools for massive intellectual property infringement of Nintendo and others' copyrighted works, end quote. Nintendo is asking the court to prevent the developers from working on, promoting, or distributing the Yuzu emulator and requesting significant financial damages under the DMCA, which is the, oh, God, I'm going to get it wrong. But it's the Digital Millennium Something Act. I'm sorry. I'm totally brain farting on that. But basically, that's sort of like the copyright, digital copyright protection. The article goes on to say, if successful, the arguments in the case could help overturn years of legal precedent that have protected emulator software itself, even as using those emulators for software piracy has remained illegal. Quote, Nintendo is still basically taking the position that emulation itself is unlawful, end quote, Foundation law attorney and digital media specialist John Leuterman told Ars Technica, though that's not the core legal theory in this case. So before I continue, ultimately what they're saying is Nintendo's claiming that even though the emulator, and this is how it's always been, emulators are not illegal. What you do with them most of the time is. And so, you know, that's always been kind of this weird line that if you had an emulator, that was okay. It wasn't the emulators at fault. It was the ROMs you were downloading online or the disc images you were finding online to play disc-based games. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I feel like that's still accurate. You know, I think that's a fair question to say who's essentially at fault here. Is it the people making the software so people can download pirated games? Or is it the people that are downloading the pirated games? I don't know. I think it's a fair question. You know, I don't think it's as cut and dry as saying that, I mean, the reason they make this emulator is for that purpose. There is no other purpose for it. So you can't really take all responsibility out of the software maker's hands. And just because that's how it's always been doesn't mean it's how it's always going to be. But I digress. So the article goes on to say, the bulk of Nintendo's legal arguments rests on Yuzu's ability to break the many layers of encryption that protect Switch software from being copied and or played by unauthorized users. By using so-called prod.keys obtained from legitimate Switch hardware, Yuzu can dynamically decrypt an encrypted Switch game ROM at runtime, which Nintendo argues falls afoul of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act's prohibition against circumvention of software protection. See, if I just read a little further, I wouldn't have looked like a fool not knowing what DMCA stands for. The article goes on to say, crucially, though, the open source Yuzu emulator itself does not contain a copy of those prod.keys, which Nintendo's lawsuit acknowledges that users need to supply themselves. That makes Yuzu different from the Dolphin emulator, which was taken off Steam last year after Nintendo pointed out that the software itself contains a copy of the Wii Common Key used to decrypt the game files. Absent the inherent ability to break DRM, an emulator would generally be covered by decades of legal precedent establishing the right to emulate one piece of hardware on another using reverse engineering techniques. But Yuzu's quote-unquote bring-your-own-decryption design is not necessarily a foolproof defense either. Nintendo's lawsuit makes extensive reference to the Quick Start Guide. So this is the guide basically that is on the Discord or on the website that tells you how to use Yuzu. It provides on its own distribution site. That guide gives detailed instructions on how to, quote, start playing commercial games, end quote, with Yuzu by hacking your older Switch to dump decryption keys and or game files. That guide also includes links to a number of external tools that directly break console and or game encryption techniques. So this is another example, right, where they're saying that emulation and emulators were fine before, but now they're getting into how they emulate this stuff is by essentially having to hack an old Switch to dump the decryption keys to make your software work. Through these instructions, Nintendo argues that the Yuzu developers brazenly acknowledge that using Yuzu necessitates hacking or breaking into a Nintendo Switch. And really quickly before I continue, this also kind of goes into the right to repair stuff, right? Like, there's the idea that once you buy a piece of hardware, you should be able to do essentially whatever you want with that hardware. There really shouldn't be a terms of use that say you cannot use this Switch for this. It's yours. You bought it. And so that's, you know, that gets into a little bit of that right to repair where they're saying like, oh, you know, you can't open up and try to fix your own hardware and stuff like that. And so I think there's a little bit of that in here. And I think Nintendo is stepping over a line, a clearly established line from the past. But the article goes on to say Nintendo, Nintendo also points to a Yuzu Discord server where emulator developers and users discuss how to get copyrighted games running on the emulator, as well as publicly released telemetry data that shows the developers were aware of widespread use of their emulator for piracy. As the Yuzu devs wrote in June 2023, Tears of the Kingdom is by far the most played game on Yuzu. And that was in June of 2023, and I believe that game launched in late April of last year. Does that sound right? Something like that. Now, this is the lawyer from earlier. While Loyerman says that instructions and guidance are not circumvention, he added that the more layers of indirection between Yuzu's software and activity and distribution of the keys, the safer they are. The detailed instructions, the Discord server, and the knowledge of what all this is used for are at least problematic. Whether Yuzu can get tagged with circumvention simply by providing instructions and guidance and all the rest of it is, I think, the core issue in this case, the lawyer went on to say. In a response on the Yuzu Discord, the development team wrote, "We do not know anything other than the public filing, and we are not able to discuss the matter at this time." Okay, so ultimately, yeah, Nintendo is pushing a boundary that was clearly established before, and they're trying to say that Yuzu is using basically breaking a user agreement of how to use a Switch hardware to get the keys that they need to run the software, and that they're also facilitating the piracy by having tutorials and a Discord server set up to help people basically pirate, right? And it's interesting because a lot of the subreddits, if you go on Reddit and you go to like emulation subreddits, there's a lot of strict rules about like not sharing links to torrent sites or not asking for ROMs and all that sort of stuff because they're trying to make sure that they stay one step away, right? They're trying to stay one piece away so that they're not as liable. Excuse me. So the article goes on to ask the next question. What about my backup copies? In the lawsuit, Nintendo argues that Nintendo argues that, quote, there is no lawful way to use Yuzu to play Nintendo Switch games, end quote. But that statement has a few potential holes that could serve as a possible defense for the emulator maker. For one, the U.S. Copyright Office generally allows users to make copies of legitimately purchased software for archival purposes, with a few basic caveats. Accessing such personal archival copies would potentially be illegal use for an emulator like Yuzu. So Nintendo's trying to claim that there is nothing you could do with this emulator that would be legal, but that's not necessarily the case because the Copyright Office allows users to make copies for archival purposes, which you could use the emulator to do. Okay, so this is ticky-tacky, but it's all part of it. Nintendo goes directly after this argument in its lawsuit, arguing that buying a Switch game only means you, quote, have Nintendo's authorization to play that single copy on an unmodified Switch console, end quote. Any other copy is by definition an unauthorized copy, Nintendo says, even if it's made by the original purchaser for their own personal use. Now, this is very interesting because this has kind of always been the rule, right? And again, emulation, ROMs, emulators, this has always been a gray area. And while emulators have always, it's always stood up that they're not illegal, that has been as set as a precedent in a court of law. There was always this sort of weird, hey, you know, if I make a copy of the game from my own copy, that copy is legal. I'll be honest, I don't even know really the 100% laws on that, but I know I've talked to people that say things like, well, if you've ever owned the game at one time and you made a backup copy and then you sell the game, you still have the backup copy, that's still allowed. And I don't know if that's accurate or not. And I think that's something that's a really interesting question and part of this argument, I think. The article goes on to quote Loiderman again, saying Loiderman thinks Nintendo's arguments probably go too far. Nintendo wants to say that the license agreement for all users restricts their use of the game to only run on Switch. And that's problematic because of 37 CFR 201 indicates a number of exceptions and limitations on how far-reaching and applicable licensing terms like that can be. So Nintendo's claiming that you have to use their system a specific way, and there have been issues where, and let me see, I'm admitting I'm doing this in the real time. So it's a, that is a code of federal regulations, and that federal regulation says exceptions to prohibit against circumvention. And I think in here is where it talks about that basically you can, like, they can't limit what you can do with your hardware. But they are talking about, there's a lot of stuff here. Sorry, this is a very long federal statute. but it does mention that. That basically that might be problematic if Nintendo's trying to claim that you can only use their games on their system. So the article goes into a little bit more about homebrew and and accessibility. Yuzu defenders point out that the emulator's ability to run a wide variety of homebrew Nintendo Switch games, ranging from weather tracking apps to, of course, a Doom port, running the software through Yuzu is a legitimate use that doesn't require breaking Nintendo's encryption or software copyrights. So again, it's kind of a ticky-tacky little thing, but they're saying we are using Yuzu for encryption-breaking stuff. But it's stuff for like homemade apps like weather tracking apps and a Doom port, which how many people are using it for that, though? The article goes on to say, in its lawsuit, though, Nintendo argues that the vast majority of Yuzu users are using Yuzu. Yuzu. The vast majority of Yuzu users are using Yuzu to play downloaded pirated games in Yuzu. For instance, the lawsuit points to data showing that leaked copies of The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom were downloaded 1 million times in the week and a half before the game's release, a time period that also saw thousands of additional paid members added to Yuzu's Patreon. Yuzu is secondarily liable for inducing this kind of infringement, Nintendo argues. So since it was quoted in the article, I did want to bring that up. And typically, the emulation scene is kind of an underground thing, and it's a lot of people doing this for nothing but the love of preservation. A lot of emulators were created for free. They're downloadable for free. They're not meant to be sold. In fact, almost every emulator or ROM hack you play, if it says you purchased this, it says, you know, it's ask for a refund. It's not meant to be purchased. And a lot of these things, you know, use licensing words that way that say you can license this, you can do this, but you cannot charge for it. It needs to be free. And so that's been kind of the underground emulator scene since forever. It's always been free. Well, so I went to Patreon and I looked up, I looked up Yuzu Team creating a Nintendo Switch emulator on Patreon. So they have three membership tiers. You can be a fan for $1 a month. Doesn't get you anything except you pay them $1 a month. Then there's early access for $5 a month. It says, thank you very much for your support. You get Yuzu early access releases, which include daily updates for special unreleased features. You also get exclusive news on Patreon. And then there's Early Access Plus Plus, which is $10 a month. It says, thank you very much for your support. You get Yuzu Early Access releases. You get exclusive news on Patreon, access to better live technical support on Discord, and access to development polls. So Patreon's kind of great because it tells you exactly how many members they have and how much money they make per month. So as of right now, Yuzu Team has 7,525 paid members, earning them $30,000 a month. $30,000 a month is what the Yuzu team is making off of this emulator. So this is where you start to get really, really nasty in here, right? Because I understand that the emulator itself is not the problem. But the idea, and this is also, so this is actually problematic in a couple ways, because I'm going to say something and a lot of people are going to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then I'm going to say something else that's completely contradictory. So let me get through the whole thing before you like jump down my throat. If they're working hard on a service for customers, they should get paid for that. The idea that all the work that went into these emulators and no one really made any money off that kind of sucks, right? Because a lot of people poured their heart and soul into it, made a lot, you know, and made a lot of people really happy, have pushed forward emulation. But also, you're essentially, they're making money off of software that hurts another company, right? So you can't say it's the little guy, right, when they're getting $30,000 a month through Patreon. I mean, that's wild, man. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. $30,000 a month. And I don't know how big the team is, to be fair. And I don't, you know, and I'm not saying anything about them. I don't know anything about them. I don't know anybody on the team. I have never interacted with anybody on the team. I don't follow this emulator. I don't use it. But the idea that they have 7,500 paid members a month and they're getting $30,000 a month for this software to be run, that's pretty wild, man. And that's one of those things where you can understand why Nintendo looks at that and says, hold on a second. So there's some people that made software that allows people to play downloaded copies of our games. So they don't buy our hardware. They don't buy our games. And the company that's helping them do that is making $30,000 a month. I mean, that's a lot. You know, it's not, and it's not like someone set up a GoFundMe to like make the software and it was like $5,000. I mean, that's $30,000 a month. That's a big deal. It's a very, very big deal. So I'm trying to think like where to go from this, because admittedly I am okay with emulation. I'm not typically okay though with like piracy as far as stuff that's actively out, right? And now we read earlier, let me go into this part of it. We read earlier that they had, the lawsuit points to data showing that leaked copies of The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom were downloaded 1 million times in the week and a half before the game's release. A time period that also saw thousands of additional paid members added to Yuzu's Patreon. So they're saying 1 million times in a week and a half. Well, here's Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom sales numbers worldwide as of last December. So the first 3 days it released in the UK, it sold 200,000 copies. Then the first 3 days in France, it sold 500,000 copies. The first 3 days in Japan, it sold 2.24 million copies. The first 3 days in the Americas, 4 million copies. So could you argue that they would have sold? It's not one for one, right? You can't say, well, they would have sold 5.5 million instead of 4 million in the first 3 days in the Americas because it got pirated. You can't really say that because a lot of those people may not have bought it if they don't even have the hardware anyway. First 3 days worldwide, it sold 10 million copies. So this game sold 10 million copies in the first 3 days worldwide. And then as of December 23rd, so this isn't even a year. This is just from when it came out in April 23 to the end of the year. It's sold 20 and a quarter million copies of the game. That's also incredible. So it's hard to make a point saying that it hurt your sales and it hurt your game when you've so far in less than a year sold 20 million copies. Now, if you had downloadable data and you said, hey, it's been illegally downloaded 5 million times, could you make an argument saying that we should have 25 million in sales, not 20? Yeah, I guess, but it's just not one for one. It's never going to work out that way. And you have to wonder how many people have a Switch and bought a Steam Deck and then wanted to basically wanted to play it on their Steam Deck instead. And so then they downloaded it from that. They may have already bought the game. I don't know. Yeah, but that's the thing, is you don't know. And you can't really, you know, you can't really go too far on that. And so again, I'm going to reiterate this every now and then through here, but I am okay with emulation for the most part. I think emulating and preservation are tricky terms to figure out. Do you want access or do you want preservation? Preservation doesn't mean you get to play every game. It just means that it's there in case we ever need to bring it back or a company decides they want to remake it or something, port it to modern consoles or something. as opposed to access, which means anytime you want, you can play anything you want, whether you have 2 cents or $2 million in the bank. But when it comes to something that's new, you know, like if you go to Pirate Bay or any torrent sites, you can download any of like the newest stuff that comes out, like new PC games that just hit. All that stuff is there day one. You just go get it. And that's kind of messed up, you know? And like, I understand that, like, I think there is a difference between not having $800 to buy an old PS2 game, and so you pirate it, to not having $60 to buy a new game that just came out. And I'm not going to talk about it this week, but one of our upcoming podcast topics I want to talk about is the damage to the industry and how we're losing tons of people are getting the axe and losing their jobs to these huge companies. But on the other side of the coin, you've got people that refuse to pay for the product that these people make. And so it's not one for one. Again, it's not saying that if no one pirated, that there'd be no layoffs. I'm not saying that. Okay. Like let's not turn this into like a tiny little like ticky tacky back and forth thing. I'm just saying though, that you've got people that refuse to pay for things and they want all these things that are made by people who are creative, and they want the money for that. They don't want to pay. But the people that make these things, we want them to have a good life. We want them to make a good living, right? And that's part of the issue we're running into with all these layoffs is, you know, a bunch of quality of life. And when the job market was really, really competitive, companies were paying more for employees. They were offering better benefits. They're doing things like that, which now as the economy is cooling, right? And inflation's cooling a bit. I'm not saying it's deflating you. I'm saying it's cooling a little bit. That you've got companies now and the job market's changing. It's not as worker friendly as it was during the height of COVID when people just needed, you know, when jobs just needed bodies. It's not like that anymore. So you're starting to see those markets closing, the job market's closing. And so, you know, you want these people to get paid better. That all costs more money. And so you can understand why companies have to protect themselves. And now I hope I don't get it because I just literally said I'm okay with emulation. But I'm certainly not a corporate bootlicker either. And I don't think corporations are the way to go. I don't think corporations are like the end all be all greatest things of all time. But I also don't think that every corporation is evil and that we need to somehow bring down every corporation. I was just saying this to my wife the other day, you know, in a perfect world, yes. Would all things creative be not subject to capitalism? Sure. You know, would it be nice if just, you know, you wouldn't need money. You could just make games and then your games wouldn't need to be sold to anybody, you know, in just all creative things, movies, music, games, none of it was part of the capitalism system that we're all part of. But all we have all these amazing things because of capitalism and because of the ventures. And I shouldn't say all these things. There's a bunch of great indie devs doing really great stuff. Okay. So don't like, again, please don't like take this as like, I'm not a corporate bootlegger, but you have to look at it and say, we wouldn't have had all these awesome Super Nintendo games if Nintendo wasn't a company trying to make money. We wouldn't have all these awesome PlayStation games if PlayStation wasn't a company, if Sony wasn't a company trying to make money. You know? I mean, we have to just be realistic about that. That's all I'm saying. We just have to be realistic about it. And so, you know, so you've got, that's kind of the two sides of the coin, right? You've got people that just want to pirate everything, but then you've got companies struggling with layoffs and stuff. So anyway, let's, I got a little bit of a tangent there, but let's kind of roll it back a little bit. I want to go back to the article a little bit. Let's see. Yuzu's developers could also argue for the emulator's existence as a tool to help make Switch games accessible to individuals with disabilities that prevent them from directly using Switch hardware. In a 2021 DMCA exemptions ruling, the Copyright Office allowed the circumvention that enables individuals with disabilities to use alternate input devices to play video games. This one kind of bugs me because I think, you know, this isn't why they made it. Okay, and if that's what you're going to argue in court, like, that's really crappy to me. Like, don't hide behind disabilities. You know, like it's cheapening things that actually need to have exemptions for disabled people. You know what I'm saying? Like don't try. If they try to use that as an excuse, I think that's really crappy. The article goes on to say, I think Nintendo may have a hard time arguing against legitimate use cases like accessibility. Related to the argument, of course, will be the question of how accessible is the console to begin with. but I will also acknowledge you can do a lot more and potentially reuse other accessibility devices or software when running something on a PC. So, you know, I mean, I guess, yeah, you could make that disabled argument, but I just think that's, I mean, if that's what you have to take it to win, I mean, I guess maybe that's what being a lawyer is. Maybe that's what the American judicial system is. But personally, I don't like trying to hide behind that. And there's a few more things here. But I think we pretty much got the gist of it. And, you know, when I started this podcast, part of it was to tell you guys that, like, I don't have an answer for this. I don't know who's right or wrong. You know, I kind of threw out there, this is the article, this is what Nintendo says. I think, you know, I don't know. I just feel like modern emulators, they're designed to be used for piracy. I mean, I don't see how you could say that Yuzu is used for anything else, because almost every Switch game you still have access to and pretty readily available access. Besides the secondhand market, like my store, you have, you know, besides being able to get it all digitally, you also can buy them new in stores still. Nintendo still publishes everything first party. You can still get plenty of copies of it. It was a successful hardware launch, so there's lots of copies of their most popular games. So the only reason that you would use Yuzu is to circumvent paying for a game legally. You know, and Nintendo is oftentimes one of the few companies that you don't see them doing massive layoffs. You know, they always bring back that quote where, you know, during the failure of the Wii U, you know, top Nintendo people took pay cuts to, you know, to not lay off employees. And so people share that all the time. And Nintendo's got a pretty good positive fan base, you know? And so when something like this comes up though, you wonder how that's going to hold up. And a lot of people are understanding and some people aren't. So I went to Twitter, probably not advised, but one of the most popular messages or one of the popular things talking about this I saw was from Twitter user Juice Man. And he said, Yuzu facilitating piracy is 100% true. Don't expect me to shed any tears over Nintendo going after Yuzu when these broke bums are pirating brand new Nintendo games along with entities like Kotaku encouraging piracy via Yuzu. Now, that's a whole other issue, I think, too, where you've got essentially what you would call a media outlet. I mean, Kotaku, if you trust them as a media source or not, you know, they claim to be a media source. And, you know, if they do articles where they say things like, you know, piracy is good and it's the best thing to do, like, that seems kind of messed up, you know. However, this person seems like a very big Nintendo fan, and good for them. I'm happy for them. But I also think that, you know, to be rooting for a company, like, that's weird too, you know, to be like on the side. And this is one of the first things I wanted to say in the podcast, and I kind of forgot, but I'm going back to now. If you somehow look at this from a console warrior perspective, which if you've listened to this podcast before, you know my stance on console warriors. It's like, I hate it, and I hate the engagement from both sides, from all sides, really. Like, the idea that your plastic box is better than this plastic box, or that this company sucks because it doesn't have good game, blah, blah, just enjoy, play what you want to play and enjoy it, man. That's it. It's that easy. So here you've got someone who's very clearly, though, like a Nintendo fan. And so they're okay with other people getting shut down because they love the company that's doing it. Not because it's right, but because they love the company that's doing it. Now, the reason I brought this one up is because there were some interesting replies and some interesting quote tweets. So one of the first replies is, I'm guessing you feel the same way about every emulator in the market then. If so, more power to you. But years down the line, many of these emulators end up being the best way to play games that are unaffordable or impossible to own or play on hardware for a variety of reasons. I think that's a fair argument. But then what's the time rate on that, right? Like, is that mean that we shouldn't have a Switch emulator until, you know? Because the thing about the Switch that's kind of funny is it's very old tech. I mean, the Switch came out in 2017, so it's already 7 years old that it's been on the market. But when it launched, it was essentially like a low-power tablet. You know what I mean? So it wasn't top of the line when it came out, and it's certainly not top of the line now. So it was, I think it was quicker and easier to get out and emulated than other devices. Like, you don't see a PS5 emulator, like where you could on your PC play PS5 games. You don't really see anything like that yet. I'm sure they're working on it. I'm sure someone's making great, you know, great progress. But anyway, so the guy who did the original post replied and just said, right now, Yuzu is facilitating the piracy of current Nintendo games. The game doesn't even get a chance to warm up retail shelves or even the eShop for purchase before it's dumped all over the internet and thrown into Yuzu. I think that's fair also. I think that, you know, like, I mean, we can't officially put a time limit on it, right? Like, you can't say, okay, you cannot pirate this game for 6 months. Like, that doesn't happen, you know, but it, I don't know. It's weird. That's the point, is that you can't, like, it's actively for sale, and the people who created it are making money because, now, this is something I've run into in both times, one in emulation, but two in also owning a game store. You see a lot of people argue against buying used games because the money doesn't go to the original creators, doesn't go to the publishers, the developers, doesn't go to anybody except the quote-unquote greedy game store owner, right? But you say that, but then here you've got people who are emulating stuff where the money would go to Nintendo and go back into the company so they can make more games that you love. It just seems like, I almost want to use the term like penny smart, dollar stupid. Like you're saving some money today. And then in 10 years, you can be like, man, Nintendo never make good games anymore. Like, they just don't make the same, you know, because maybe they have to change. Maybe Nintendo goes out of business. Maybe they get bought by somebody else. Even though recently, I think an article came out that said Nintendo is the richest Japanese company with as much money as they have on hand right now. They're printing money with the Switch, man, which also makes it hard to like root for them because they're not struggling. You know, if they were struggling, it'd be different to be like, hey, man, stop stealing their stuff. They're struggling, but they're not. But does that make it any less right? If a company's struggling or not, does it make it okay to steal from them if they're not struggling? Yeah. And again, I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm just saying this is the conversation we're having. And then I don't know. There's like this weird one here. Someone replies and says, I'm sorry, I don't want to play on a console that runs Breath of the Wild so bad that I get sick 20 minutes after playing it. Well, I mean, that's weird to me. Like, the, I mean, so you're not going to, you didn't buy a Switch or you don't like how the game runs on Switch, so you're going to pirate it for PC. So then at this point, maybe don't play the game. I mean, like, that doesn't ever seem like an option to anybody, right? When you're talking about emulation, piracy, preservation, no one ever, like, it seems like that is never an option for anyone to just go, okay, well, I can't play that game then. Oh, you get sick playing it on the console because it runs it poor at a poor frame rate. Well, maybe don't play the game then. I don't know. It just seems weird to me. It just seems weird to me that that's never an option, that maybe they won't play the game. No, the option is, no, I'm going to play the game illegally. I mean, okay. You know, people don't get busted for piracy and stuff, man. Like, people who make money off of, like, you know, hacking and cracking systems, those people usually get busted. But the average person downloading ROMs is not getting in trouble for that. So, I mean, is that why it's easier to do? Because no one ever gets in trouble? Like, man, this is such a complicated system and situation, you know? This person goes on to say, I won't go too deep into the argument, but I will say I feel emulators are best when used for older games that can't be easily accessed today, not newer games that can easily be accessed, and not just Switch games. I'd have similar stance for PS5 or Xbox Series emulator as well. I think that's a really good point. Yeah, and that essentially the original poster says that's, you know, that's his opinion as well. And then the tough part, you know, like, and there's a few people that I follow on here that were like making comments about, oh, bootlickers are going to bootlick, and this person, a rare juice man L, and, you know, I don't know, it's, well, this person, a derogatory term for Japanese people, we'll skip that one, that's terrible. But anyway, I liked this thread because it was oddly, you know, he didn't get ratioed for this stance, but people who were replying, disagreeing with him, were also not getting ratioed. So it was an interesting conversation that there seemed to be a lot of support for both kind of angles here. And then, of course, there's somebody like this, like, make a real console that's not decade-old hardware on launch and you won't get emulated. Well, okay. So it's Nintendo's fault. I mean, like, these are people who are playing Nintendo games on their PC because they want to, but they're crap-talking Nintendo and the hardware that was made to run those games. So, like, That's where I get frustrated too, because these people like Nintendo games, but they want it to be perfectly their way. I don't know. It's just so weird to me that like it never comes across. People don't just go, okay, I'm going to pass on that then. I'm just not going to play it then. You know, here's someone: emulation isn't piracy. That's not a problem with the Yuzu team. It's a problem with the end user. Well, yeah, but what's the only point of making this emulator is for one use. I mean, I can understand Nintendo's point, especially when it's their current system. It's not like they're emulating Super Nintendo games and Nintendo's trying to shut down Super Nintendo emulators, even though Nintendo has been known to send cease and desist letters to ROM hosting sites, which I think sucks. And I'm 100% against that. I think that really sucks, especially when Nintendo themselves do not make all those games readily available. If I could go onto my Switch and download any Super Nintendo game ever made, I probably wouldn't pirate, because I don't have to, because it's easy access. That's why Apple Music is successful, because it and Spotify and things like music isn't pirated as much as it was before, because it's easier to access now. And if they give us access, most people will pay for it and will support the system if it's easier than the other option. But if piracy is easier, that's what people are going to do. I mean, it's just kind of that's just the way it works, you know, unfortunately. Yeah, I don't know. I could look through a whole bunch of other comments here, but I think you get the gist of it. And so I don't know where to leave you all with this. Many times I have an opinion and I share it with you. And this one, I don't know. I don't think they should make money off of an emulator that facilitates piracy. But I also feel like it's impressive. And I feel strongly that people who created emulators in the past should have gotten some money for the great work they did into today's, you know, for us today to be able to. I mean, you can go to websites and literally play NES games built into web browsers. You don't even have to download anything anymore. It's incredible. Like, we're living in a great time to play games. But there has to be a middle ground between all piracy is good. And it's not even that they say it's good and okay. They're saying it's the right thing to do. You know, and somebody who I do respect, Frank Faldi from the Video Game History Foundation, we talked about him a few podcasts ago, and we talked about the emulation thing versus piracy versus preservation. Like, I respect him, and I've had personal communications with him, and really nice guy. But I can't get behind that, you know, when people say things like emulation's not only like a right, it's a duty, or emulation isn't just the right thing to do, it's the only thing. Like, weird statements saying like, you should just be emulating. And like, you know, because is he going to come out and say, hey, I'm totally all for emulation, but not of current consoles. He doesn't say that. It's almost like he's, you know, he's okay with this. And I don't see how, in a world where we're questioning the success of current video game companies and layoffs and job issues, I don't know how we go from there to saying it's a good time to pirate a company's current lineup. And it's okay that we're not paying for the products that we want to consume. You know, I don't know. So anyway, that actually went a little longer than I thought it would, but I'm glad I got it out. Let me know what you think. Follow me on Twitter at GameTradeGreg. I refuse to call it X. It's not X, it's Twitter. So follow me on Twitter at GameTradeGreg and tweet at me and let me know you listen to it. And if you've got a different opinion, I'm all for it. I love conversation. I don't ever close my mind off to a good argument and a good point of view. I want to learn and listen to everybody. As long as it's done respectfully and it's done in a way where we treat each other well, I'm cool with it. And I'd love to hear someone else's take on this and have a good conversation about it. And yeah, so I hope you all enjoyed getting a second podcast in not much later than the other one. I could just drop it right now. Maybe I'll just put it up right now. And then just be like, hey, y'all, here you go. You get two for the price of one. So anyway, as always, I really appreciate everyone listening and listening and letting me into your home and taking some time to listen to some old video game collector and game store owner rant about and shake his fist at the clouds. I always appreciate y'all very, very much. So hopefully y'all are doing well. I don't really have any updates because I just did an update earlier in the episode, in last episode, and I recorded this the same day. So there's not really a lot to talk about, but I hope everyone is doing well. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Remember, if we all do a little, it's a lot. And take care of yourselves. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next week. not next week. Why did I say that? I'm so ingrained to say next week. Okay, let me back that up. Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching. Take care. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.